Mike Malevsky with another edition of Inside the City, looking at activities associated with the city of Palmer. Hey, well, welcome, Jeff Combs. Today we're going to be talking about things that are happening associated with the airport. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, and thank you for the welcome. It's good to be back. This is my third time, I believe, back, and glad to be here.
Right. Now, the weather, I have to begin by talking about the weather. This has been an extraordinary winter. We've been talking about February as being warm, relatively snow-free, certainly have had a little bit of wind, and that has affected a number of aspects of life here in the Valley. I suspect that a different weather year affects the airport as well.
It does. It does. It affects not only the economic bottom line of the airport, as far as of course, there's my budget for snow removal is I don't even hardly had to touch that portion of it, and it changes also kind of the mix of users of the airport, the transient users that come in. I've seen maybe one aircraft on skis.
Okay.
Whereas when we have a lot of snow, there's a whole bunch more ski aircraft. So kind of changes the mix there a little bit. And it also brings out the flyers that are not as comfortable flying in the dead of winter and more spring-like weather.
Mm-hmm.
So operations kind of switch a little bit, but definitely are different for this time of year.
Okay, so I would submit that, you know, we live in downtown Palmer, and although the operations of the airport are not intrusive, we are aware because we walk along the roads that border the airport, for example, and I see a lot of what appears to be different activity, and I'm not sure that's associated with necessarily the weather, or have there been changes, for example, in the number of medium weight aircraft. I noticed some DC-4s out there and so on. How's the airport doing in terms of evolving its use pattern?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that we talked about last time, and that we're about three quarters of the way complete now, is the master plan. And
right.
The master plan nails down and identifies exactly what you're talking about. What is the pattern showing on increase of aviation use? Overall, it's showing about a 5% increase per year in aviation traffic. And when you break it down, it also breaks down in the mix of different types of aircraft, smaller general aviation versus the larger larger commercial operators like you see. So there is a rise on the commercial operators.
Mm-hmm.
The DC-4s you see out there, they belong to Alaska Fuel Haulers. They do fuel hauling to the bush. They only account for approximately 34,000 operations last year. And an operation is considered is a takeoff or a landing.
Okay.
And out of those 34,000, 2,600 were the large body aircraft, like the DC-4s, the DC-3s, the Forestry Service when they use their Convair 580s. absolutely. There has been they have two aircraft right now, and the other one is just about ready to be in service.
Mm-hmm.
So you may even see some more.
Okay. So when you mentioned the Forest Service, what I also noticed was some discussion about this year in terms of what kind of fire year it's going to be, because given the lack of snow cover, lack of precipitation generally, there's some suggestion, we've experienced it in the past, that when you have this kind of dry situation, the winds do a nice job of both drying and helping a fire if it begins to get along, that I'm wondering if this year might be a heavy use of that northern end of the airport as the Forest Service ramps up its activities.
My thoughts are the same, and I can kind of back that up with just some unofficial talking with the forestry kind of getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
They somewhat expect the same thing. The lower amount of snowpack, especially in the mountain areas where we were not going to have a lot of runoff and continual runoff for, through the spring to kind of feed those springs and creeks, as we know. And, of course, the wind dries out, makes everything kind of dry and brittle. And so we are expecting to have more operations. Probably, I mean, nothing possibly as similar as last year. And last year was quite a bit of use that we had out there with the north side. So I think they'll be busy.
And there had been some talk in our last time about helicopters. What's happening in that arena?
Helicopter use is still about standard. Most helicopters that come through are transient.
Okay.
They're either flight school aircraft that are coming in from Merrill Field. They fly out here and they take advantage of the less congested airspace. We have had medevac helicopters come in and do patient-to-patient transfer. You have a helicopter medevac come in and they'll meet up with a Learjet, which is one thing we can service at the airport because of our long runway.
Right.
So that makes it easier, and also we'll have a patient transfer with an ambulance and vice versa. But there has been an increase, I think in general sense that there's been an increase in helicopter traffic in the airport, but not based on the airport at this time.
Okay, got that. You mentioned earlier talking about the larger airport plan and advisory group that's working with it. What's happening in that whole direction of things to look for as being changes in the airport in the near to medium future?
Well, as we went through the master plan, this phase we were in is completed the design aircraft and the that uses the airport. So, and when you said DC-4, it's basically that size aircraft.
Right.
That's the maximum designed aircraft for the airport. So it keeps our airport at what they call a B3 status, which is able to support a 6,000-foot runway, basically.
Okay.
So we can support those large aircraft. And then the master plan kind of came up with three different alternatives. And we did have a good meeting on the 11th at the depot. We had another public outreach, and we'll have another one in April too. And in the last public outreach we had, we discussed development alternatives, and we also discussed the integrated noise model and the modeling they're doing for noise out at the airport. And there was three different when it comes to the design types or the future of the airport. This is a 20-year design plan that we submit to the FAA and the city, and then this is where we're going to go. It's looking like more likely it's going to fall into what was Plan B. This is all on our website, too, on the city website. If you go to the airport, you can look at all of these documents. But the Plan B is basically saying that the airport, growth-wise, in size on the ground, does not need to grow any more than it is.
Okay.
We have sufficient space on the airport to conduct both the commercial activity with the larger aircraft plus increase our general aviation as well.
Okay. Well, very, very interesting, because there had been obviously some discussions, concerns even expressed about the airport and the other jewel in the city, and that is the golf course.
Yes, and there was a third alternative that was actually in there, and it showed if the airport grew outside of its boundary, the most logical place, since the airport owns the golf course, would be into the golf course.
Right.
So that was kind of thrown out because we don't, at least in the 20-year planning period, the master planners, engineers, even with the rise in traffic, don't see that as an option at all.
Okay.
So we want to keep that there. That's as much of a jewel for the airport as in both. They're kind of symbiotic out there.
Now there is there's been some recent activity in an area that is unfortunate, and that is there have been some accidents that have occurred in the air. In one case, two aircraft recently crashing into one another. I'm just curious in your opinion, as you look at Palmer's Airport, from a safety standpoint, the way in which we have either visibility or surrounding terrain features, et cetera, knowing that we do not have we don't have a full tower sitting here. So we have a portion of that, but I'm also aware that there was a suggestion that many pilots who fly locally do fly in airspace that is watched in some ways by Anchorage. So do you have any comments about Palmer's safety scene, if you will?
Absolutely. That was very unfortunate mid-air collision that occurred. And a lot of activity over the valley, as we all know.
Sure.
In aviation. So what we see is a more comfort from aviators to operate in and around the Palmer airspace, because we do have the you were alluding to the flight service station.
Right.
And they give, whereas a tower is a controller where they control the flow of traffic in and out of an airport, a flight service station can just give advisories. They listen to a radio, they have visibility, they kind of have a little tower looking area, and they monitor. You call into them though and say, I'm here, this is my intentions are to land here. They pass that on to the next aircraft. Mm-hmm. So there's an extra level of safety there that a lot of people feel very comfortable with.
Okay.
Especially your not quite seasoned aviators. They like that increased situational awareness because of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, one of the things that I know in some airports, and some, I think in particular, having recently flown into Juneau, is that because of the weather and the way the mountains are surrounding that particular area, there's always a look toward improving the electronics, the aids that allow people to fly into a place. We've talked a little bit about the airport in general. Are there any planned changes over the next, let's say 10 years that would affect the way in which the airport functions for pilots?
Well, as technology increases dramatically year by year, even though the certification and the FAA is kind of, it's a longer process, more and more interesting systems are coming along to enhance the approaches and the navigation of our airspaces. And also keeping terrain avoidance. That's the big one that I think we deal with here that some of the other airports in the valley don't have to deal with, because, of course, we have the Butte, we have the Lazy Mountain, and
sure,
so forth and so on. So there are there's nothing in the 10-year plan that we've identified that is going to increase our safety factor in that mm-hmm. aspect.
Okay.
It's still pretty much just the approaches are on this, basically on the city side away from the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And but as technology improves and gets cheaper for the general aviation population, who knows?
Okay. So we've talked a little bit about the number of landings, the use pattern of this local airport. I know that there are a number of economic factors that work to perhaps put something of a lid on the continuing increase in general aviation in the state. But the population is also growing, and we know that we have a high proportion of any population growth that are pilots. What is happening to Palmer's Airport relative to the growth of population of aircraft and flights around this whole South Central area? Is it getting busier?
It is. It has its its peaks and valleys. Some of the things that we're working on to increase the general aviation traffic is of course, wind. Wind is
sure.
our friend and our enemy sometimes in aviation. When you're tied down on the ground, it can be very much your enemy, as we've seen. Increasing the hangar space, low-cost hangar space, which we're we're constantly looking for a venue to get that out at the airport, which mm-hmm. we do foresee that in the very near term future.
Okay.
That increases the let's say you put up a 10, they're called T hangers, just the way sure. they're configured. So let's say you put up 10 bay T hanger. That will have an incidental, probably bring in five more folks that are going to tie down
okay.
at the airport because they're going to wait for those to come available.
So it's
kind of the tertiary effects. Plus our, we have a parts store on the airport. We have an engine shop and a custom shop, two fuel vendors. And all of these things, as we increase our general aviation, they're attractants, and they that helps bolster the economy
okay.
of the airport.
Right, because I'm thinking that a number of people have suggested in the past, we may have even discussed it, that, say, Anchorage is a very busy place. Lake Hood, the Merrill Field, Stevens International Airport, all of these, you got a lot of traffic going there. And I know that one of the advantages here is that we're not quite in that busy space, but that busy space also spills over in our direction as well. It's obvious that that's happening. So,
yeah, you're absolutely right. And what we see is, again, a lot of the training flights will come out here because they have they're not in that congested airspace. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's two major things that a business looks at aviation operations. Doesn't matter if it's passenger, doesn't matter if it's cargo, fuel hauling, training, whatever. And that is fuel. Okay. Burning fuel and engine time, how much time you're burning on the aircraft. As so much time goes by, you have to have another inspection. Those are quite expensive. So the ability to get from your hangar, your tie down, or wherever you're located on the airport, onto the runway and depart the aircraft and do whatever you're going to do, and then in the inverse, return and quickly get back to your spot, is quite an economic incentive that Palmer has. We don't put people don't go into holding like you do. I'm sure everybody's experienced that in the airlines.
Well, sure.
We've got some weather, we're stacked up, we're backed up, and then you get sent into holding for half an hour.
Okay.
Big inconvenience for the person, huge cost factor for the airline. So, and that goes along with cargo, that goes along with, because you have the engine time and the pilots, everything just kind of trickles down. So that's one great thing that we have. We do not have that kind of congestion that they do. So yes, to answer your question, it does. It spills over, and I think it's a great opportunity
okay.
for the airport.
Oh, good. Well, I have to ask this question. We touched upon it in the past, and increasingly it appears of concern, and that has to do with drones. So have you noticed since you were last in here or over the last 6 months or so, any, especially with this good weather, any increased drone activity by individuals who are experimenting or developments in terms of regulations that are going to make it a way of continuing to use the airport without having drones all over the place?
It is. It's a very, very, a very good question and very important topic. And the drone use, I've received calls and from citizens that would like to operate their drones and fly around, check their house out, check sure. their property, and that's fantastic. I mean, it's still, it's a great technology. Where, of course, it becomes an issue is if you, you're in this, you're operating your personal UAS, and it, and that, of course, with aviation does not mix, period.
Sure.
So there are some guidelines that have been put out by, and the FAA is still working their way through how exactly this is all going to work out. But there are some guidelines that have been put in, some kind of mitigating risk factors, and that is an altitude that their UAS operator is allowed to operate up to mm-hmm. 500 feet, and also the size of the UAS. If it's above, and boy, quote me on this, but I want to think it's 150 pounds, somewhere around there. If it's above a certain weight, mm-hmm. it requires, it's not just for a hobby use. It requires
sure.
more certification
right.
through the FAA. And the big one is, if you're within 5 miles of an airport, you are required to contact that airport, me, the airport manager,
right,
and, or the sponsor, and basically say, hey, this is where I want to fly. I'm going to fly it around here. I know I'm within 5 miles of your airport. Is it going to be okay? And normally, if it's if you're going to stay below that 500 or 400 foot AGL level, it's not an issue. It becomes an issue when it's on an approach path for an aircraft, especially an instrument approach. Now, there's instrument training goes on all the time in beautiful weather. They use a hood. They use all kinds of devices they're not, you know, the instructor is looking outside for obstructions, or the student is looking at instruments. And then, you know, so you can just see the mixture of that, where they're focused more on teaching and learning the instrumentation and not looking out for a very small speck in the sky of a drone. And, you know, even if you're operating, most of the heights that you get down to on our approaches are right around 500-600 foot above ground level.
Sure.
And these drones are up at about 400 foot. So it really only takes a slight error. And the drone getting a gust of wind and getting carried up 100 foot, the plane being a little bit lower than it should be. And then you have a huge recipe for disaster. So those are the basic guidelines they've come up with so far to work off of. And yeah, when it comes to any questions, I'd like to just put it out to the general public, please. I mean, I'm contact me. And I'll look at it and evaluate it. Most of the time, it's not an issue.
Right. Okay.
Even if you're near the airport, most of the time, it's not an issue.
Good points. Have you had any drone encounters?
None. No, not any. I haven't had any reported.
Okay.
A couple calls about can I, and basically went through the whole same spiel as that. So,
okay.
But no encounters.
All right. Well, thank you. Jeff Combs, you're here on Radio Free Palmer. Mike Malevsky, we're doing an interview, an Inside the City piece to look at the airport. Any last comments before we finish up?
You know, I'd just like to thank the public for coming out to the master plan process. Even if your comments are negative to the airport, we need to see those because it really does help us. It doesn't fall on deaf ears. And it helps us develop a path forward to become that symbiotic airport, small town right next to each other in such a great location. So I appreciate this venue, and thank you so much for your time.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff.